Subterfuge at the president's news conference last night.
Steve Koff of the Cleveland Plain View.
Thank you. To follow up on Jake's question earlier, sir, so many Americans are concerned that this plan, particularly the government insurance, the public option, would lead to reduced benefits or reduced coverage.
Well, that sounded like any other question by a White House correspondent, didn't it? But that was not Steve Koff of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, who the president had called on. That was Steve Tama of the McClatchy Newspaper Group, which later prompted this verbal rebuke from the commander-in-chief.
Oh. Well, I said Steve Koff, but he just stood up, huh? Well, that's not fair. Shame on you. All right, get in there real quick, Steve.
Anyway, Steve Tama claimed he answered to Steve Koff's name because he was hard of hearing. My only question, why didn't Todd Zwillick from The Takeaway pull the same trick? Todd was in the room as an officially credentialed White House correspondent, but did not get called on. Todd Zwillick joins us now, along with Ezra Klein, domestic and economic policy correspondent for The Washington Post. Todd, Ezra, hi, good morning. Thanks for coming on.
Good morning.
Hi, Brian.
So, Todd, what happened there with Steve Koff and Steve Tama? Was it the old I'm hard of hearing scam?
Oh, you know, who can say? But it worked, didn't it? You know, those East Room news conferences, as you can tell by watching on television, are full of decorum and probably more full of decorum than most reporters would like. It is a good chance to point out a part of this that is frustrating for reporters, which is the predetermined list of questions that the president goes down. Now, contrary to popular belief, reporters, at least as far as I know, don't submit their questions. I don't think any self-respecting journalist would ever do that. But the president has a list, and he goes down, and it's predetermined by Gibbs and the rest of the press operation there at the White House. So there's not a whole lot of impromptu barking or raising your hand or standing up or yelling, Mr. President.
Well, why would that be a better way? Rather than distributing in some kind of rational, you know, on some kind of rational basis, as I guess they think they're doing, who gets to ask questions? Why should the question go to the person who's most urgently raising his hand at that particular moment?
Well, from my perspective, because after having been to four of these this year, I've never been called on. And so I would. I think a better strategy for me would be able to bark or get in front of somebody or wave my arms, and maybe I'll get a question. So that's. I think from my perspective, that's it. Otherwise, you know, it makes sense that the White House wants to get the networks. They want to get. They want to get to ABC, NBC, CBS, a couple of wire services. AP, of course, always goes first by tradition. That makes sense. They would want to do that. You understand why they do that. You know, it's not that. Somebody from public radio has never been called on, but, you know, somebody who's never been lucky enough to be called on, I'd like the chance to
yes.
wave my
and, you know, you had the opening, Todd Zwillick, just like Steve and Steve. I'm going to replay it. I don't know if you caught it as it went by. There you are, Todd Zwillick from The Takeaway, from public radio, waiting for his big chance. And the president says,
Chuck Todd.
Todd. He said Todd. Why didn't you just dive in?
I could have said, I'm hard of hearing, I heard Todd, and I jumped up, Mr. President.
That's right. And
right?
If it was Chuck Todd, it was Chuck Todd from NBC News, but who'd really have known the difference? Okay, Ezra, let's get serious here. Let's play two clips from the news conference that get to the heart of the tension, I think, that the president was trying to address between spending more to cover everyone with health insurance while trying to spend less. Here's one.
Our proposals would change incentives so that doctors and nurses are free to give patients the best care, just not the most expensive care.
And he's trying to get us comfortable with the idea of spending less on health care and that can be better care. And then he makes probably his biggest health care news of the night.
We also want to create an independent group of doctors and medical experts who are empowered to eliminate waste and inefficiency in Medicare on an annual basis, a proposal that could save even more money and ensure long-term financial health for Medicare.
So Ezra Klein, domestic and economic policy correspondent for The Washington Post, this idea is still very new to people, even though they've been batting it around in Washington constantly for a few days now. An official group empowered to eliminate inefficiency in Medicare. It's a big demand of conservative Democrats. Again, the idea of less spending for better care. Can you explain to us what that actually is and what it would actually do?
Sure. So there are a couple things going on here. One is the less spending for better care, but let's put that aside for a minute because it's actually a different issue. What Obama's talking about is something called MedPAC. MedPAC was actually created by Republican Congress a number of years ago, and it exists right now. And it is a body of experts, very, very well respected in healthcare policy circles. It's appointed. And, you know, every year they basically release a document, a big sort of a big white book, and it sits on people's shelves, and it has a lot of very excellent both analysis and recommendations for the Medicare program. But nothing happens because Congress is, you know, much more interested in making sure device manufacturers in their home districts are feel taken care of than in following MedPAC's recommendations. So the idea here would be that MedPAC would be given more power, that every year they would release their recommendations, and unless Congress did something affirmative to stop them, those recommendations would take effect. So the way people are describing this is MedPAC on steroids. And the really simple way to put it is that this comes from the administration's conclusion and many other people's conclusion that Congress is not capable of doing, you know, a good sort of continual job reforming the healthcare system, that they are not well set up to do it. And so, like with other things, in particular the base reauthorization and closing commission that was developed a number of years ago to help close defense bases that, you know, individual members of individual districts wanted to keep open, they're trying to take it away from Congress a little bit under the assumption that, you know, a panel of experts could, you know, do better than, you know, your congressman trying to decide how much oxygen my grandmother should get.
So this MedPAC on steroids, he said inefficiencies and waste in Medicare. He used those words, which are not loaded words, but you just talked about taking oxygen away from my grandmother. Should people on Medicare be concerned that a panel like this, if in fact it's installed with such power, that it includes not just looking at money being thrown down the drain, but tests and treatments that they may want, but that are not deemed to work often enough to be worth reimbursing for?
Well, I want to be clear. I didn't say taking oxygen away from your grandmother. Who's your congressman, Brian?
My congressman, where I actually live, Charles Rangel.
Charles Rangel. So how much do you think Charles Rangel knows about medicine?
I don't know. He just went through this whole Ways and Means Committee 1,000-page bill process.
But actual medicine, right? So Charles Rangel, along with other people right now, are making these decisions on how much oxygen your grandmother should get, not taking it away or giving her more. Literally, you know, how it will be reimbursed and how much she'll get. So the question is, do we trust Charles Rangel and Dana Rohrabacher and other people like that to do it on the front end, to actually make these very granular decisions about this treatment and that treatment and, you know, hip replacements and vascular surgeries, you know, how much we'll pay doctors, which is to say how often they will do them, or do we trust sort of experts and Congress can be in an oversight role?
Well, who are these experts? You know, we just went through a long Sonia Sotomayor confirmation hearing process where Democrats went out of their way to discredit the notion of an impartial umpire. Right? Sitting on the Supreme Court, and that there could be such a thing as an impartial umpire. Who are these impartial experts who would be on this board, and who would appoint them, and why should we trust them?
Well, the question is impartiality, right? It's expertise. And one of the things about Sotomayor that was very significant in that hearing, of course, was that she had, you know, a large history of, you know, knowledge about the law, had been serving as a judge for many years. And it's sort of like that. I mean, the people on MedPAC right now, and you could imagine that, you know, MedPAC would change a bit. I spoke to Nancy Pelosi yesterday, and she said that, you know, maybe Congress, if we went in this direction, you know, maybe Congress would want a little bit more you know, control over who gets appointed. So right now the commission is a guy named Glenn Hackbarth, and Glenn Hackbarth lives in Bend, Oregon, and he has been a healthcare executive. He's been in government. He's been a policy analyst. He's the founder of Harvard Vanguard Medical Associates. I mean, he's considered, you know, a very serious scholar with some practical experience in Medicare. Another guy who's going to be coming on to the panel next year, I believe, is Bob Berenson, who's a well-known sort of Medicare expert who works at the Urban Institute in Washington. I mean, these people are from all over the country. They're sort of appointed by boards of their peers. And, you know, right now, and of course, when it got more politicized, maybe it'll become more problematic. But right now, you know, I can tell you in health policy circles, in part because nobody listens to them, they're considered to do a really, you know, really an excellent job. And it's not about being impartial. They all have their beliefs and they all have the places where they come in with biases and opinions. But it is a lot of expertise, and it's a number of them, and they try to do the right thing, and they do it with more knowledge than your median member of Congress, and fewer needs to satisfy, you know, business constituencies back home. So I think the end outcome could be better.
So, Todd Zwillick, is it too early to tell this morning to you know, to gauge the public opinion impact of the news conference? Did the president quell people's fears about costs running out of control and make them hungry for health care security and, you know, make them comfortable with this idea of this independent panel? What do you think?
Well, you could check the Instapolls and the dial turners who watch these things for the pollsters and get one answer, but I don't think that's the important answer. Pardon the cliche, but time will tell. Dick Durbin, who's the majority whip, said last night, just before we all headed into the White House, that this August 7th, this so-called August 7th deadline of getting a bill on the Senate floor and passed, is not going to happen. So everyone's bought themselves more time. So whether the morning after the president has convinced people is less important than how this is going to play over the remainder of the session, over the next 3 weeks, as the Finance Committee and the Energy and Commerce Committee on the House side crunch these health bills together. I don't know that members are as worried as everyone says about getting beat up about this over August, because frankly, and I hate to disappoint my colleagues in the news business, but a lot of people don't really listen to us in August as much as they do during the other times of the year.
I'm shocked to hear that. I'm shocked.
Yeah, so getting beat up over August may not be a big concern, and they'll come back in September and they'll get down to more hard work on this. It was the interesting thing about the MedPAC proposal last night. You're right, it has been kicked around on the Hill for a number of days to placate the conservative blue dogs. Last night was the first official verbal endorsement from the president of this idea, and that was a message for Capitol Hill. Most members of the public, thankfully, probably don't follow MedPAC or really know what they do, but the president sent a clear message to the wavering members of Congress that he supports this. And let me just add real quickly to one thing that Ezra said. He hit it right on the head. Jay Rockefeller, senator from West Virginia, is the main proponent of this on the Senate side, and he said very clearly to me 2 days ago when we were talking about this proposal, he said, look, most members of Congress don't know anything about medicine, as Ezra said, and a lobbyist comes up to them and says, Senator, if you vote for this, production of these sleep apnea units in your district, you've got this factory in your district. We can triple the jobs in your district that work at this factory. Congressman, the senator says, great, votes for it. Well, he says he wants to get that dynamic out of Congress as much as possible, mm-hmm. get the lobbyists out of these decisions that are made for Medicare, and let the people with the expertise, as flawed as they may be, start to worry about it.
So, Ezra Klein, we just have 30 seconds left, but it is a tough line to walk for the president, because he wants to reassure us, as he did in some of that news conference last night, that our insurance won't be able to be taken away from us anymore, that things won't be denied as easily, things like that, at the same time as making us comfortable with the idea of cutting in order to pay for that security. And so it's very hard to gauge whether he's reducing anxiety levels or raising anxiety levels on the part of the public.
Healthcare is a complicated thing, but one thing I'll say is that we keep being here. Every 19 years or so, we try to reform this thing again, and we keep doing it because it's broken, and eventually we're going to have to fix it. There's not going to be another choice, and then, we're going to hope we'll fix it in the best way we can, but, there will be fear with that. The president promised change, and, I'm not the first person to point out that change is scary.
Well, we'll have you back in 2028, I guess, when this comes around again.
Let's hope not.
And maybe sooner. Ezra Klein covers economic and domestic policy for the Washington Post. Thank you. Todd Zwillick from The Takeaway, thank you.
My pleasure.
Coming up in a minute, we continue our Ask the Headhunter series. More advice for the unemployed from Nick Corcadilla. Stay with us.